Okay, so it's been a couple weeks due to some of my travels and singing night. So let's recap a little bit. So the goals of our studies are to learn how God moved from man's problem of sin to his solution of Jesus on the cross. Understand how everything in the Bible relates to redemption. I've said that every stroke of the pen in this book we know of the Bible all has something to do with the cross. If there is something that occurred between here and now or between Genesis and Revelation that had really no impact on redemption or the cross, it's just not there. I believe it was John who wrote that there are many things that Jesus did, many other things Jesus did, but they're simply not recorded in this book. You know? There are some things that just are, they may have been awesome stories and they have some really cool impacts for us, but they just, when it comes down to the idea of redemption and God solving our problem of his son on the cross, it's not there, okay? That's all this book is about. This book we know as the Bible is all about God redeeming mankind from our sins. To understand how everything in the Bible reveals God to mankind. So this is kind of the second part of, or the second purpose of this book we know as the Bible. As children, in a normal household, again, you know, barring the fact that there are many households today out there that are troubled, but just in your standard normal household, the children look to their parents for guidance, and children tend to follow in their parents' footsteps and act like their dad, act like their mom. You know, they pick a lot of their characteristics up. Well, we as God's children, that's a big thing that we strive to do as well. And this book here tells us a lot about God. In almost every story we see in the scriptures, there is something about the characteristic of God, his personality, who he is. There's something to learn. And so we get this really deep and well-rounded idea of who God is and what he likes and what he is like by reading all the things that are written in the Bible. And finally, to get a better understanding of how we got here on the orange carpet tonight. Again, we're here for a reason. You know, this we all just didn't meet one time walking through the grocery store and said, hey, we're starting this cool little group down here on South Park Avenue. You guys want to come hang out with us? We just come together and sing some random songs and do these things we made up called prayers. You know, we just didn't make this stuff up. There's a reason we're here. And the reasons that we're here all relate to redemption. Jesus on the cross, all the things we find in this book. So just to kind of recap some more. So the scheme of redemption, the plan of God established before creation to redeem mankind from sin. We talked about viewing the Bible as one book with the real division taking place at Genesis 3:6 rather than between Malachi and Matthew. You know, we have the Old Testament and the New Testament and 66 different books throughout this thing. And when on the surface, it just seems real mixed up, right? A bunch of wild, crazy stories, big global floods and talking donkeys and the list goes on and on and on. Wild, crazy things. And so it makes sense to us when a lot of our unbelieving friends tell us, Kirk, this thing is just insane. It doesn't make sense. You really expect me to believe that this happened? Okay? And they're, to an extent, they're right. This book has a lot of wild, crazy stories in it. It does. And so if we don't understand this book, though, that's exactly all it is a bunch of wild, crazy stories. But when we start to understand the purpose, what's driving it all, what's behind it all, suddenly those things start to make sense. The stories don't seem so wild and crazy. We can actually start making sense of them and accepting them for what they are. And so in this division here at Genesis 3:6, we see two very different worlds, okay? We see the world prior to sin and the world after sin. Two drastically different worlds. You and I simply cannot fathom what life was like in Genesis 1 and 2, okay? I've said it in here that I like to say that we can see Genesis 1 and 2 as heaven materialized, okay? Heaven on earth. That's literally how great it was and how perfect and just how just amazing it was. It was a life that you and I just can't understand. Okay, you and I were born into a world where there was just chaos everywhere. You turn on the news, chaos. You walk down the street, chaos. Go sit at a courthouse one day. I dare you. Just go sit at a courthouse and go listen to some of the hearings that take place. It's chaos. This is the world we live in. To us, this is normal. You know, this is what we understand. And so we can't understand the world without sin. It just doesn't make sense to us. To a world without sin, without guilt, without shame. Those things are just foreign to us. And so, but that's the world of Genesis 1 and 2. And so at Genesis 3:6, we see sin enter the world and literally everything changed for mankind. We discussed how Genesis 1 and 2 can be described as God in perfection, man in innocence. Strife and tragedy were simply unheard of. You know, Adam didn't lie awake at night stressing over how he was going to put food on the table. It was just there. God said, hey, you can eat of any of this. Have at it. You know, Adam didn't lie awake at night figuring out how he was going to make ends meet, how he was going to keep his job, how he was going to find a job. Da, da, da. That kind of stuff just did not exist in the life of Adam. That was not something he had to sweat over, pun intended. Genesis 3 through 12, described this as the background of redemption. And this is kind of where our studies have been for the past several weeks now. We've been in this portion of the Bible. And it's important that we get a good foundation here. If we don't get these chapters, the rest of it just doesn't make sense. There is a tremendous amount of information in Genesis 3 through 12 that we have to get our minds around in order to understand the rest of it. Otherwise, it just doesn't seem to be connected. But when we understand Genesis chapters 3 through 12 and everything that went on in there, then the rest of the Bible suddenly is tied together and makes a lot of sense. We've talked about how sin is the source of all suffering and no one is immune from its effects. You know, we all have seen it. Me personally, I have seen ministers, I have seen elders, I have seen deacons, I have seen the best of the best have their lives destroyed by sin. No one is immune. You're not, I'm not, and we would be absolute fools to think that we are. It is imperative that we stay on guard every single day of our life. It's too risky. It's too costly. And so no one is immune from sin and the effects of sin. We've also talked about how there's three ways that sin affects us. It affects us, number one, by just the consequences of our poor choices. You do something stupid, bad things are going to happen. We are affected by the actions of others. So if somebody else chooses to do something sinful, indirectly, you might be affected some way, you know. Even though you had nothing to do with it. I've used the gas station example, right? You go to the gas station, you walk inside, you're in there buying a gallon of milk, suddenly somebody comes in with a gun and is holding the place up, and there you are. Okay, you're put in a really dangerous situation because of someone else's sin. So that's a second way that sin affects us. A third way is just simply by the natural effects that sin has brought into the world. There are things that exist today, natural disasters, all kinds of strife and various tragedies that simply did not exist prior to Genesis 3:6. It did not exist in that world of Genesis 1 and 2. And so that's a third way that we're affected. Just the effects of sin itself, the curses that it has brought on the world and the lives of mankind today, they have effects on us. So regardless of how righteous a life we live, even Jesus himself was affected by the effects of sin. And the man lived a sinless life. Yet he was still put on a cross. Okay? We're all affected by sin in some way or another. God is not to blame for this. You know, this is a choice we all made. Genesis 3:23, we have all sinned and fall short of the glory of God. In a very indirect way, each of us has taken a bite of that forbidden fruit. Okay, each of us have walked up to that tree that God said don't eat of it. Each of us have walked up, pulled off, and taken a big old bite of it. Okay, and in a very virtual sense of the word, because every one of us is responsible for the nails driven in the body of Christ. All right? We all have done it. Each of us is responsible. So the background of redemption, some things we've discussed. We've discussed how sin changed the earth in very physical ways and also how it affected the lives of mankind. You know, survival suddenly became an issue for Adam. Adam suddenly found himself lying awake at night going, how am I going to make this happen? One of the curses that Adam was told is that by the sweat of your brow, you're going to have to make sure you have food on the table. It wasn't that way before. But suddenly that became the new life for Adam. The pain of childbirth was greatly increased for women. We mentioned that the struggle between husband and wife. You know, one of the curses, when God was talking about the curses that would come to women, it was your desire should be for your husband and he will rule over you. Boy, that, if that isn't marital strife 101, I don't know what is, okay? So something seemed to have changed with the marriage relationship even. That relationship between the one man, one woman that God brought together, something seemed to change with that at Genesis 3 and verse 6. Something that wasn't there before. All right, so a lot of things changed when sin entered the earth. So we talked about that some. We talked about how the first gospel sermon was really preached there in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. Okay, where God talks about how Satan will bruise the heel of the seed of woman, but that this one will bruise the head of Satan. And so we talked about, you know, bruising a heel. Yeah, it might hurt, but it's temporary. Okay? But a blow to the head is deadly. And so the idea is that while Satan may have won a skirmish there at the cross, God has won the war. Okay? The battle belongs to the Lord. We sing that song, an awesome song. The battle belongs to the Lord. The victory is God's. That's all there is to it. Satan may have caused some problems and brought some pain to the things that God wants, the life that He wanted for mankind, to our lives, but the crushing blow is dealt to Him. When it's all said and done, He's going to be the one to suffer. I saw a bumper sticker one time. I thought it was pretty awesome. He said, the next time Satan reminds you of your past, you remind him of his future. All right? That says a lot. And it's true. The victory is ours, guys. As children of God, the victory belongs to us. And we need to keep that in mind. And so while life can be hard here, the gospel solves it all. It is the power of God unto salvation. It's in Romans somewhere. But God first laid this out in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. That's where God really said, all right, here's what's going to happen. Here's how I'm going to resolve this issue. It's really vague. And, you know, Adam at the time was probably sitting there scratching his head going, okay, whatever you say. But now that we have seen the cross event completed, the gospel completed, we can look back at that verse and say, that's exactly what he said he was going to do. So the first gospel sermon was preached there. We talked about the fall of Cain and his evil descendants. We talked about how the descendants of Cain, they really reveled in their evil lineage. Lamech was one of these guys. 500-ish years or so after everything happened with Cain, Lamech is just boasting and bragging about how evil he is. And if Cain was avenged, then I'm avenged sevenfold or seventyfold, whatever it was. He was proud of the fact that he was an evil man. Okay, so that was we talked about the line of Cain some. And then we started talking about the descendants of Seth. And with Seth, we're told that men began to call on the name of the Lord. And so we see these two lines here. We see a line of righteousness and a line of evil. And these two lines will lead to a lot of stuff in the scriptures. From here on, I mean, we see everything kind of link back to these two lines. We discussed the timelines of Seth's lineage. You know, I showed that big graph up there that covered several hundred years, and showing the overlap of these connections. And the thing we took from that was, you know, suddenly Adam doesn't seem to be this distant guy that was just here on the earth at some point. Okay, when we look at the lifespans of Adam and Seth and all the way down through Noah, we see there's a lot of overlap, and they were all alive at the same time. If I remember correctly, I think Adam had died by the time Noah came along, but at least Noah's dad was still alive when Adam was. And so it's quite possible that Noah's dad knew Adam. They may have lived in the same area, you know, they may have talked and shared stories. And so this is important to us because it helps tie together that history and the stories that were passed down. You know, we can totally understand and accept the fact that Noah would have fully known where he came from. Okay, if we assume that his father knew Adam, and Adam may have related those stories, because we're looking at a line of very righteous people here. Okay, that story was passed down. And so they knew where they came from. Cain knew. Lamech knew, rather. Okay, the descendants of Cain, they were fully aware of the lineage and what all took place. And so the story is there. And so we can trust that when we read this book in here called Genesis, we can accept for at face value and at fact that the story is accurate. It wasn't Moses just writing this stuff thousands of years later and just making this stuff up. No, the story was there. Okay, it had been passed down. The very man who lived it, Adam himself, was there to relate that story to his descendants and ensure that it got passed on. All right, so kind of getting back into where we left off. This isn't exactly where we left off a little bit before, so I'm just trying to bring us all up to speed again. It's been a couple weeks, so I'm trying to really rewind a little bit. So we started getting into this a few weeks back at the last class. We started talking about the total corruption of mankind, okay? So we started talking about Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, how it came about when men began to multiply on the face of the land, that daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose. And we discuss how the sons of God here is a reference to the righteous line of Seth, and the daughters of men is a reference to the evil lineage of Cain. Okay, so what we see is the sons of God over here, the righteous line of Seth, looking over to Cain's people and saying, hey, they got some great looking women over there. What's your name? How you doing? Okay? And so we start seeing this mix of these two lines come together. And we talked about how righteousness and unrighteousness simply do not mix. I talked about how Alicia quite frequently tells our children, it is much easier to pull someone down than it is to pull someone up. Okay? If I was to come and stand on this stage, it would be really easy for you guys to, and I could stand on the edge, it'd probably be pretty easy for y'all to pull me down. But I mean, I would have to exert a tremendous amount of energy to pull one of you up. Okay? It's very easy to pull much easier to pull someone down than it is to pull somebody up. And so more often than not, and you and I have, I'm certain you have seen just as much as I have, evil tends to corrupt more so than Christianity have an effect. Okay? Evil seems to take over Christians far more than it does Christians seem to take over evil. Okay? The effects and the influence of evil on Christians is bad. And we've all seen it. We've all seen it go down. As I said earlier, even the best of us can succumb to evil and can have our lives destroyed by it. We talked about 1 John chapter 2. Do not love the world nor the things in the world. For all the things that are in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. This is not from the Father, but it's from the world. And we tied this back with Eve. Okay, Eve saw the fruit. Satan was talking to her and said, hey, you know, this stuff is good. You can be like God, knowing the difference between right and wrong. And she saw it. She said when she saw it, and she saw that it was pleasing to the eye, and that it was good to eat, and that it was good to make one wise, she She took of it and ate. And so we see that same thing there, that lust of the flesh, that lust of the eyes, that pride of life. Okay, these things are not from the Father. These things are from the world. We talked about 1 Corinthians 15:33, how bad company corrupts good morals. And it does. We've all seen it. Some of us have maybe even personally felt the effects of it ourselves in our own lives. Okay? It does. It's a simple biblical fact. We talked about 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 14 through 16, of not being bound together with unbelievers. I believe it's the King James Version actually uses the word yoked together with unbelievers. Okay? Because there's simply not an equality there. Okay? When you think of two oxen that are yoked together plowing a field, the idea is they're supposed to be moving together, pulling the plow together. Well, if you've got one who's wanting to go one way and another who's wanting to go another way, it's just not going to work. If you got one who's standing still and one who's trying to move forward, it's just going to move in a circle. Okay? They have to work together. That's the idea. And so it's very difficult to work together with believers and unbelievers. So the bottom line was that there is much danger in partnering ourselves up with unbelievers and the immoral. One side is going to have to give at some time or another. More often than not, it's going to be the Christian that's going to be pressured to give. The reason I say that is because Christians aren't simply, we're simply not ones that are pressuring people to do the wrong thing, right? We're not. That's not our objective. Our objective is to pressure people to do the right thing. Well, if we're binding ourselves with evil, more often than not, evil and immoral people are not going to be pressuring us to do the right thing. Okay, they're going to be pressuring us to do the wrong thing. And so we really run the risk there of putting ourselves in a bad situation. And so we must be careful about it. Now, that's not what it says. It says, do not be bound together with unbelievers. So this is Paul telling believers to not be bound together with unbelievers. There's no unbelievers in the church, right? So... should not associate with people. The Bible makes it clear, you know, we're in the world, but we're not to be of the world. And that's what Paul is getting at here, is that we're not to be partnering ourselves together. There's a difference between being friendly with people and being in there and, hey, how's it going? And partnering ourselves up with them, okay? Binding ourselves with them. So, yeah, the bottom line is there's much danger in partnering ourselves up with unbelievers and the immoral. So we have to be very careful about that. All right, so this is kind of where we left off last time. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 3 through 4 says, this is Moses, okay? Moses is, he knows he's dying, okay? He knows his days are numbered. And so the book of Deuteronomy is, Deuteronomy is essentially Moses' last sermon to the people of Israel. Okay, and he's rehashing a lot of stuff, saying, look, remember. Remember is said over and over and over in the book of Deuteronomy. And so he then starts telling them, look, when you go into the land of Canaan, here's some things you need to keep in mind. And one of the things he says is that you don't need to give your... furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them, talking about the people who are currently living in the land of Canaan. You're not to intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And we see this happen, don't we? We see Samson, we see Solomon, two men of God here. One was a judge of Israel, one was a king of Israel, who was very wise, to be overtaken by, in this case, pagan women, but pagan and unbelieving spouses. They bound themselves together with these unbelievers and they were led away, and it absolutely destroyed their lives. And so, what does this tell us? Well, this gives a strong admonition for our children, right? And I want to spend some time here. It is my personal opinion that we strongly urge our young people to make bonds of friendship with God-fearing and God-following people. Brethren, it is critically important. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm not going to make any bones about that. All right, many of us stress our desire for our children to attend Christian colleges, and there's a reason why. And look, I went to a Christian college, okay? I went to Faulkner University 4 years, and I'm going to tell you right now, I entered that campus thinking I was coming into heaven on earth. You know, man, it's going to be devotionals all the time and just these great Christian women. It took me about 3 weeks to realize, oh dear, this is far from heaven on earth. I learned a lot. There was partying there. There was a lot of sexual immorality there, okay? Let's not sit here and pretend that our Christian universities are just these angels everywhere. You know, they're not. But I can tell you they're far better than many of the state schools, okay? They are. And so there's a reason why many of us really want to stress our children, hey, you know, we highly encourage you to go to a Christian college. We highly encourage you to go to a Christian college. Why? Because we all know what our children are about to leave the nest and go face. And so it's important for us to strongly urge our young people to have their friends with people in here. People from Bible camp. People from the churches down the road. Okay? It's so important. Can they be friends with people at school and everything? Yeah, of course they can. Okay, sure. As I said just a bit ago, right? We're to be in the world, but not of the world. And so one of the ways that we can strongly teach our children to not be of the world is by doing what we can to make their friendships here. It will have a tremendous impact on them, I'm telling you. And so, correct.
A relationship.
Correct.
So, it don't matter who you are, if you don't have a relationship with God, whether you're not going to be effective with you, whether with your spouse, your children, or people that you're supposed to be serving before.
Sure.
Just be an example. Give them the idea of what a godly life looks like.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. We also must strongly urge our young people to marry God-fearing and God-following people. Again, I'm not going to apologize about that one. I'm not going to make any bones about that one, okay? I have seen couples where there was a believer who married an unbeliever. The unbeliever ended up becoming a Christian, and they live a happily life ever after. I've seen it happen, okay? But folks, we run a real risk. We run a real risk. Okay? And so it is imperative. Again, this is Kirk's opinion. All right? That we strongly urge our young people to seek out spouses who are God-fearing and God-believing people. Lex?
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm an example of what you just were talking.
You're one of them, huh?
Absolutely.
Yep. Man, amen.
I wouldn't be where I am today without this beautiful woman.
Here, I'm going to give you all those for that one. Absolutely. And that kind of goes back to what John was getting at, right? We can have very good influences on unbelieving people. And that's wonderful. It works. It works. It does, okay, if we're doing our job. But it's critical for us, again, to be on that path, right? I don't know. I've just seen so many destructive things take place with unbelievers and believers coming together and partnering up, okay? Whether it be business deals or whether it be marriages. Well, go down the list, I don't care. I've seen a lot of destruction happen. And frankly, in my own personal life, I've seen more destruction than good things happen. And so when it comes to partnering ourselves up with people, it's just critical that we do our best to work with believers. Sure. Yeah, our children have to, I mean, they're going to look at us, right? That's just the way it is. When it comes down to it, we're the ones in their faces every day. They're the ones that they're looking at every single day, in the morning, in the evenings, and in between. We're it. And so if they're seeing us living a double life, well, be prepared for them to do the same thing. But I just feel very strongly about this, brother, and I'm not going to make any apologies about it. Again, it's my opinion. Feel free to disagree with me. But, brethren, when it comes to our young people, they're so easily influenced. Their hearts are so malleable. And we have to do everything we can to surround them with godly influences all the time, and encourage them, strongly urge them to spend their time with people who are going to be godly influences on them rather than the opposite. John?
God don't have any pain. We only have joy.
Okay.
So, you have to see God with us. You have to see God with
us. Okay.
You're a non-sick person for you. You don't have to come to me. If you come,
sure. Opinion, okay? I really just want to encourage all of us to strongly urge our children to surround themselves with godly people, and we as parents and grandparents doing everything we can to have our children here, okay? And get them in the Bible camps, get them into whatever other kind of godly forms of involvement that we can. It's critical. It really is, okay? And the Bible is pretty clear about that. And so I don't make apologies for that, and we don't either to the world, okay? The world tells us that this stuff's crazy, Kirk, okay? No, I mean, again, you go look at the news articles today. You know, I just saw PayPal is ticked off with the state of North Carolina because they've passed some law. They've modified their equal opportunity law, right? So, you know, the equal opportunity law is that, hey, you're not allowed to deny job opportunities to people based on race, nationality, gender, all this kind of stuff. And so they've made some changes to that, but apparently to the LGBT, lesbian, gays, bisexual, transgender group, that it wasn't good enough for them. It didn't go into enough detail and specifying this. And so they're a lot of them referring it to the bathroom bill. Okay, where people aren't, there's just this movement going on in our country today, if you've kind of been out of the loop, where people are wanting to be allowed to use whichever restroom they feel in their mind they need to, whether a woman or a man. Well, I'm clearly biologically a male. It says on my birth certificate I am a male, but I think I'm a woman, and so I should be allowed to use a women's restroom. And this is causing a big uproar. Okay, and we're just getting to this point today where it's like, are we just really losing our minds that much?
If you look at the term politically correct, it is almost always in direct contradiction to the Bible.
Yes. Yeah. And so things are just going crazy, you know, and this is what our children are facing. And so I just want us to do everything. Again, I cannot stress this enough. I'm going to harp on this. We don't need to make apologies about it, because the world says, look, you need to allow people to do whatever they want to do. No, I cannot and I will not go there. Okay? I don't care how free this country is and yada, yada, yada. There is still a truth to be taught, brethren. And it is critical that we are pounding this stuff in our children's heads. Because, folks, when they leave our homes one day, they're going to be facing a firestorm of mess, and they've got to be prepared and grounded. So I'm not going to make any apologies about this, and I cannot strongly impress on our minds enough how critical it is. Okay, so if, you know, we talked about, right, the righteousness and unrighteousness, they just don't mix. Well, Kurt, what's the worst that could happen if they do? Well, Genesis 6. 5-7, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them. Folks, this is what comes right after the passages where it talks about how the sons of God saw the daughters of men and started taking wives. They started mixing together and disaster. And folks, it just doesn't get any worse than this. Look at that. The Lord was sorry that he had made man. Do we really understand how strong of wording that is? You know, we read Genesis 1 and 2 and how God looked down on all this and said, man, this is awesome. This is just awesome. This is good. Oh, man, this is good. And now I'm sorry I did it. The Lord was grieved in his heart. Folks, that's some strong, strong words. Strong emotions from God. But
and you think about, God set this country aside, and the people need to sit here, to set it, God-fearing people. And I tell her all the time that you know, I just can't believe, when you look at all we're against in the world, ISIS's invasions, ungodliness, political correctness, you name it, is invading our country. And we don't seem to be able to do anything about it. And when you look at that verse and you think about God sitting up there today looking down, what he must be thinking about us in this country today is just terrifying.
Sure. I agree. The simple fact of the matter, though, is, you know, what's going on in our world and our country today seems like there's no seeming about it. It's a huge ordeal to us, right? Our lives are really short, okay? We see something taking place and oh my stars. But when the simple fact of the matter is, this is nothing new to God. You know, the things we see going on in this world today, God has been dealing with since Cain struck Abel down.
The young people think it's always been this way.
Not necessarily. I don't.
Well, I'm talking about 20-year-olds.
Yes and no. To an extent, I agree, but I think there's plenty out there still that can look back on history and say, man, a lot has changed. But indeed, more of the younger generation are certainly moving that direction of accepting, being more accepting and tolerant of things. Yes. Yes. Mike?
He's been saying, verse 5, every intent of the cosmos are only evil continually. Some translations translate that violence.
Translate what?
Violence.
Okay.
Okay. And it just points out to me how important it is to make sure that our own hearts, that we're not focused on violence and evil.
Yes.
And that can happen just by watching the news.
Oh, sure.
It can happen just by watching the movies. But we're real careful about what movies we let the kids watch.
Okay.
But the commercials for the other movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Well, you can't watch the news. You listen to news tonight because the woman was found severed, unclothed.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
That's far enough. Yeah. It is. It absolutely is. And the Bible is clear about that so many places. Jesus talked a lot about that, you know, guarding our hearts. He talked a lot about being peacemakers and people who are striving to find that balance, strike peace with others, Mike.
I think we need to keep it in perspective. Yeah, we're having trouble going downhill. We aren't near where
Rome was. No. We're not near what Sodom and Gomorrah was or even what this was. We're not. And that's the comforting thing to me. One of the comforting things I find our nation is that there are still plenty of God-fearing, God-believing, God-loving people here. And I firmly believe that we can make a change. Of course there is, yeah. And there always will be, right? But we still have the ability to make that change.
God is one for preserving this country, for his country, for his people. Because if he's doing that, he's not for his nation, he's for his people. It's like Cain. They were in that nation, right?
Yeah.
But the way they were blessed, because who's Daniel?
Sure. Quite possible, sure. But the simple fact of the matter is, right, you know, we say, well, yeah, we see unrighteousness and righteousness coming together. Well, hey, what's the worst that could happen? Well, that's the worst that can happen. Right? And this is strong. Again, this is strong language, folks. Really strong language. And so, let's get into more inside of God's hurt. Going on to verses 11 and 12. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. I think that's what Mike was talking about a bit ago. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. And so, the plan for the flood begins. Verse 3 of Genesis 6, the Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he also is flesh. Nevertheless, his day shall be 120 years. And so a 120-year countdown begins, during which God would work with a man named Noah to spare mankind. What does this say about God? This verse here. My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he also is flesh. Nevertheless, his day shall be 120 years. What are some things we can take out of that verse?
Some
Sorry?
He's patient.
He's patient, absolutely. We see the long suffering of God here, right? Sure. What else do we see?
He's not willing to totally destroy man.
Ah, okay. He could have, couldn't he? I mean, he could have said, I'm done with this.
He can do it tonight before we get home.
Sure.
People don't necessarily get better as they get older.
You're talking about the winding down of things?
I think he's wrong.
I don't think he's talking about better as in becoming more perfect, Lex. I think he's just talking about our well-being, brother. We wind down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so some of the things we see of this, he is just. Okay? God is a just God. And this is something we can all agree with. Even our unbelieving friends. You know, you talk to unbelievers and man, they hear about the flood and they hear about the conquest of Canaan. And boy, they just want to know, what kind of God are you serving, man? That's just going to kill people like crazy like this. Well, it's justice. It is. In all of its ugliness, it is justice. And frankly, I don't think there's a person on the face of the earth that does not agree with justice. Okay? When we're harmed, when we're wronged, when things go bad, we all want to see justice taking place in some way or another. No one is just cool with letting evil run amok. We're not. There's reasons we lock our doors. There's reasons we have courts of law. There's reasons we have all this stuff. We all agree with justice. No one is willing to allow evil to run amok.
And you know, what really gets me, I watch some programs on TV. We got into watching Good Bloods. And Satan puts little things in there that we don't notice unless you're really watching. But every time they get together to celebrate or drinking, and it becomes the point after a while that it's an acceptable practice.
True. Yeah. Yeah, Satan definitely likes to weave his way in. You know, Satan is not one that's just going to come get in your face and say, ha ha, here I am. Okay. Bible teaches that they show up as angels of light. They're going to appear as good things, as wonderful things. Oh man, this is going to make my life so much better in some way or another. This is something cool. This is something great. And he drops the hammer on you. It's the way he's always worked. He worked that way with Eve, and he's working that way with us today. Bob?
We were in his place. We would have zapped everybody. We'd say, why would you possibly put up with all this stuff that's going on?
Sure.
And then he said, annihilate them right now.
Yeah.
And he doesn't show you what a precious God is.
Yeah, so we see the justice of God, and we also see, though, that he is merciful. As Lex said, man, he could have wiped the lot of us out, and that would have been the end of it, just done. But he didn't. He's also long-suffering. You said he was merciful. Is that the word you used? Or patient. He's patient. He's very long-suffering, okay? Some of us may look at this and say, well, he needed 120 years because, Noah had to build an ark. Well, okay, but that's still 120 years. And so this is where we're going to meet Noah, and we'll get into this next week. And we'll start tying all this stuff together and hopefully start making some more progress. Questions, comments, smart remarks? No, Chuck. Go ahead.
God told Adam and Eve not to eat the fruit of the tree of your knowledge. And eat some word of it.
All right. Hey, well, thank you guys for your attention. I hope you all are getting something out of it. Again, this is one of my favorite studies ever. And hopefully I can keep this thing all tied together and not let it get all out of whack. If you have any questions for me, feel free to let me know. Sure thing.